This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on today's show is writer, blogger, scientist, university professor, and Benjamin Franklin's number one fan, Michelle Scribner-McLean.
How are you doing today, Michelle? You weren't going to tell anybody about my Benjamin Franklin love. I'm doing great. How are you doing, Mike?
I am, as I said earlier before we started the show, I am getting there.
Oh, that's good. I know coming back from an injury can be tricky, but I know you'll get there.
Yeah.
I wanted to give a shout out to a new fan of the show. We are becoming international. It's really exciting. I want to give a shout out to Emerson Pratt, who is from New Zealand, and he takes us on his runs. And I actually got to meet Emerson and his wife, Karen, a few years ago. They came to Walt Disney World, and it just so happens that we've reconnected through this podcast. So, yay, Emerson, we give you a big shout out from Mickey Miles.
How you doing, Emerson? And by the way, the New Zealand kiosk at Wine & Dine was delicious. They had a very spicy scallop in
squash.
It was very, very good. Also with us today is the owner of SockGeek.com and Capital City Running. He is known affectionately to everyone as Sock Geek, but he's just Steve to us. Steve Bernhardt, how is October going for you?
October is going very, very well, but the heat has returned to Central Texas. So we had a group out for a long run this morning, and it was trying. Very high humidity and lots of heat. So maybe I was thinking about you guys running that Tower of Terror event, and I wonder if it felt like this when you guys were running that event, because it was pretty challenging today.
Yeah, the heat can really make you think about, gee, did I hydrate enough? We have a special guest on for today's show. He is the author of the comic Misery Loves Sherman. He's one of the creators of The Cowboy. He's a Disney fanatic, and I'm going to add one more thing to his resume. He's now a runner. He's been running for about 2 years. He's a force to be reckoned with. Also, if you happen to play Sip and Snack with him at Walt Disney World, it's none other than Chris Eliopoulos. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, we need to burn off the calories after those Sip and Snacks.
Holy cow. Especially when you're halfway through and someone says, let's have the cannoli.
Leave the gun, take the cannoli.
Leave the gun, take the cannoli. Well, the topic for today's show is runner's protocol. When you prepare for a race, if you're getting started in a running program, you know, it's all about the stamina you want to build and you want to get in the miles and figure out how you're going to run and everything. But runner's etiquette, really, not runner's protocol, runner's etiquette, we're going to say. I probably should have said runner's etiquette. So, and it's usually the last thing or something that a new novice runner is never told about. So that's going to be part of the discussion. And the reason why this came up is that recently the Run Disney folks have sent out to all of us who are running in the Wine and Dine Half Marathon weekend, they've sent out final instructions, and they have begun to include runner's etiquette, protocol for the runners when you're on the course. And we thought that it would be a good idea to talk about it. So this is probably going to be one of two shows that we will discuss this, and it's important that we bring this to everyone's attention, because it's important to know what you can expect when you're training on the roads, on the trails, and what you should expect at a race, and also what's expected of you. So we're going to start off with the training runners etiquette and what happens when you're out there training. I'm going to call this the rules of the road. And since Chris is our guest, we're going to let Chris begin the discussion. So Chris, what have you observed when you started running? What kind of etiquette have you observed to be necessary when you're training and running?
I learned a lot of new things. I mean, I've been around a lot less time than you guys running. So I had to really pick up quick, and maybe these are things that you guys have known for years and just sort of do naturally. But one of the first ones that I figured out was when you're running on the road, especially when you're in the street, run against traffic so you can see the cars coming and they can see you. Make sense?
That's a great one. I think it's it's good. That was one that my human nature, I was always running as I would, you know, riding my bike or with the car. I'd always run with traffic. And I figured out quickly that if somebody's coming and I have my headphones on and they don't see me, then I won't be able to jump out of the way. But if you run against traffic, that you can definitely do that. Steve, is that something you tell your runners too?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. You know, there's been a couple of times where I've been out running before running into traffic and have to make a quick escape, you know, to get away from a driver who wasn't paying attention or is riding a little close to the edge of the road. So if I would have had my back to him, it could have been a whole different story.
Yeah, I don't run in traffic. I think the last time I ran in traffic, Michelle, was when we did the Wicked Half Marathon in Salem, Mass. That was during a race, and it was tough. It just was very poorly managed, and it was an issue. I just don't want to deal with traffic. The only traffic that I've had to deal with has been bicyclists on rail trail and maybe a golf cart here and there. But I just don't.
But it's still important because some people, that is their option. They have to run on streets.
Yeah,
so I think that's a good one. Chris, what's your next one?
Next one, again, if you're running somewhere, even on the track as well, if you happen to come across another runner or a walker who is either much slower than you or slower than you, and they're looking the other direction, try to let them know subtly that you're coming through. A good morning or on your right might help, because I've actually learned the hard way by scaring the living life out of a couple of young girls who were walking by, and I zipped by, and they must have thought I was like coming to get them or something. And so I would always say just, you know, a quick good morning or something like that as you're running by will save you a lot of stress and save some other people a lot of fright.
Oh, I think that's a great one. I've actually had that happen to me on the other end with bikers coming by and, you know, kind of almost freaking out. So, or a cough or just on your left or on your right, I think is good.
I think it's critical a lot of times to do that as well if they're walking a dog. That way they can get control of their animal, you know, before you come around them if that's a concern. You know, if, around in our neighborhood, I don't think there's anybody out walking that doesn't have one or two dogs. It's kind of mandatory in Austin, Texas, I think, to own more than one dog. But anytime I come up on somebody from behind, you know, it's on your left, and I will let them know soon enough. And usually what they're doing is they're reeling their dogs in. So I think it's a double thing for safety.
That's a great point. All right, number three.
All right, this is for Scopa and Steve. I don't think, Michelle, you're really going to be bothered with this one too much, but who knows? Well, I don't know that much about you. This one is when you're doing those long training runs, now you're getting up for the marathon and you're doing those 18-mile runs and you really got to go. You know, stopping and peeing on the side of the road is really frowned on. I found that one out the hard way. But
but we sprung you out of jail really quickly, so it wasn't that big a deal.
My wife was there to clobber me over the head.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, definitely try to find a big tree at least to kind of shade yourself behind.
Yeah, I can tell you that on my first running a half marathon down Disney World, there's a tree that I will always be, you know, waving to as I drive by, because that was the first tree that I had to make use of during the race. But I agree with you, Chris. You want to be off the beaten path.
Just stay out of the way, because I don't want to see you. Okay. What's the next one, Chris?
The next one is one that always seems to get me upset, just because it's almost common courtesy that you would think about it. I mean, you always see people in VW Bugs as they pass each other. They always have to wave, or guys riding their motorcycles always wave. I think if you're running and you pass another runner coming the other direction, it's polite to just give them a wave, a quick nod, hello, go get them, whatever. Just to, you know, be a friendly runner.
I agree. I think that is one of my, I guess I don't want to use the term pet peeves, but I'm doing a lot more road running right now, and it kills me. I mean, I'm big. I mean, you don't have to stop and give me a hug or anything, but, you know, a little head nod or a little, you know, wave of the finger or, you know, something as you go by. And it's just amazing how many people just kind of looked right through me, or the last second they'll look off to the side. And I definitely go out of my way to, you know, say good morning or, you know, that type of thing. And I think it's just good general courtesy to acknowledge each other. Like I said, you don't have to go, you know, over the top with it, but just a little something to acknowledge is definitely makes the whole world a little more friendly.
I agree. Even if they're on the far side of the road, I'll give them a little wave and say good morning or whatever. And I think it really, you know, it picks you up a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic and it's great to be friendly. In defense of new runners, I don't know, and I think that's why we're doing the show, I don't know that you would know that. And, you know, you don't want to come across as creepy either by waving to everybody. But I think what we're trying to say is it's accepted and it's okay and encouraged to do that. And yesterday I went on a super long run and I got a chance to wave at people going out and coming back. And we all looked a little worn out on the way back. But
you know, also if you're constantly on the same course, if you're training on the same area, you get to see people who are there all the time, and you know, you get to recognize. So I think the creepiness sort of like fades away. Oh, there's the girl with the funny tape on her knee when they see you, Michelle. You know, there's the old guy trying to you know, turn back the clock when they see me and stuff like that. So I think that also comes into the thing. It's like, oh, okay, so and so is out there today. We have nicknames. We had one person, Michelle, we see up there. At the rail trail that she runs funny, but you know, we always say hi to her and everything. So, yeah.
Okay, don't give away all our secrets. We're not making fun of the runners. We're waving to them, right?
Yeah, just a little nod, just a little acknowledgement can really pick you up, like you said, Mike.
Yeah, that's good.
Exactly.
All right, Chris, what's coming up?
This one is not necessarily for the road, although I guess you could do it on the road. And it's something I've learned because it bit me in the butt one time, which was don't give advice without being asked. Somebody had brought up running to me, and I, at that point, maybe was running 5 miles, and I was talking like a big shot, like I knew everything, and then soon learned that the other person I was talking to had just finished the New York Marathon. So, and then there's other people who just don't, you know, if they want the advice, if they're starting out, they're going to come to a podcast like this, or they're going to ask somebody and seek out information or advice. And I would suggest, you know, if they say I'm running, congratulations, you know, good luck. I hope everything's going good. And then if they ask you to chime in with some of your feelings.
Makes sense.
One thing I've
Okay, Steve.
On that note, one thing I've learned is being a guy that owns a running store and makes a living out of watching people run and make suggestions for footwear and that kind of stuff. I learned a long time ago not to do that during a run, you know. Come up behind somebody who maybe needs a different pair of shoes or something, you start talking to them, and I learned real quickly that's not the smartest thing to do. I don't do it anymore, but I used to once in a while and try to help somebody out, but I think it kind of was more counterproductive than productive.
Okay, wait a second. I have to ask. So you're coming up to somebody who's running and you're telling them that their shoes stink?
You know, trying to be diplomatic, but you come up behind them and you can see as they're, you know, their biomechanics are not being complimented properly by their footwear, and you know, just start a little conversation with them. And but you know, right in the middle of, let's say, you know, middle of a half marathon, they got still 6 or 7 miles to go, and tell them their shoes are bad. I think it gets in their head. So I don't do that anymore. It's something I made the mistake of doing several times years ago, and it's one that I don't do anymore. So I just let it go. But I think it kind of dovetails on that thing with the advice. You know, it kind of don't provide it unless requested.
That's good. Okay, Chris, what about our sixth piece of advice here?
It sort of dovetails off of that in the opposite direction. Just to always commend the people that you see running, even if they do run less than you. I mean, I guess all of us now are at the stage where we've run those big runs, and I have friends who from hearing about me running have taken up running, and you know, they're at a mile or they've just reached 2 miles, and just be encouraging to them. Don't say like, well, wait till you get to 6 miles, wait till you get to 18 miles, because you know what, they're doing the best they can at the stage, and you were there at some point too, and it always helped to get a good piece of encouragement.
I think that's great. I want to actually even flip that and say for people who are just starting to run, don't feel like you have to put yourself down either. I've had people say, oh, you know, I can only run a mile, or I have to walk the 5K. And I say that's great. So don't put yourself down because you're not running the goofy, or, you know, you're not doing going from a 5K to a marathon. But I think that's great advice. I mean, it's running. The running community is really helpful and friendly, and I think in general people do encourage each other. But I think that's great advice.
No running snobs allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you come across that? Do you come across that, Steve, a lot with people who come into your store?
That's a kind of a slogan that I've always had up in my running store. No running snobs allowed. So no, most people are pretty cool. But once in a while, you get those people that. You know, always need to let you know how fast their last marathon is, or what their 5K time is, or how many mile repeats they did, or something like that. And it's not necessary. You know what I mean? We're all out there. We're all in this thing together. I find I get as much satisfaction out of other people's accomplishments as my own. So, yeah, I think just everybody just kind of be supportive out there, and we'll be all one big happy running family.
That's good. Okay, and I know you're gonna take us out with your last one.
The last one is the big one. And again, something that you would think would be sort of very obvious, but in those mornings you get up and you're getting out to run, you're gonna be coming across a lot of people. And just remember the slogan: deodorant is your friend. Because, you know, you may have to stop off sometimes at Dunkin' Donuts to get a bottle of water or something like that, and you got a line behind you just sort of veering to the left as you go by. So, you know, get some of that antiperspirant deodorant stuff going and make the world a smellier place, less smellier place.
That's great. Mike, what do you think?
I think that we've done a good job of covering, you know, what people can expect as they take up a running program. And I think we now should start looking at what they can expect and what's expected of them when they take on their first Run Disney race. How about that?
Definitely.
Okay.
All right. So I will start off talking about, and I know we all have experience with these. Let's talk about the runner's corrals, okay? And Steve, I think I'm going to ask you to, in a very... 30 seconds or less, mm-hmm. describe to our listeners what the purpose of a running corral is.
Well, the main function of a running corral is to organize people based on their paces. So when the run begins, that it allows for a smooth transition from the start line onto the course. So we don't have, you know, people that are running 10-minute pace in front of people that are running 5-minute pace. So it just helps that orderly transition to get everybody on the course, nobody running over each other, allowing the runners to get to their desired pace as quickly as possible, and just make it a nice gradual transition onto the course. So that's really the main purpose of setting up these corrals.
Okay. So having said that, let's talk about things that you should do and things that you shouldn't do regarding the corrals. And Michelle, I'll turn to you to start us off with that.
Well, I think the first thing is to realize that, as Steve said, the corrals are there to kind of help people figure out who is running at what pace. And when you get your bib at a Disney race, it will have a letter on it. And that letter tells you, you know, who's going to be in the same corral as you, which corral you're supposed to go to, and it's a way to organize everybody. One of the things that you shouldn't do is to try to go into a corral with a higher letter than your number, because it's not going to be safe for you and it's not going to be safe for other people. If you are slower than everybody else, you may have faster people who might knock you over and you might be a danger to them. But Disney allows, if you want to run with somebody who is has a lower letter than you, that a faster runner can go in a lower corral. So the purpose really is to keep you safe and to make sure that you stay where you're supposed to be. What we see sometimes at these races is that there are volunteers at the beginning of the corrals, at the entrances to the corrals, and there are people who try to kind of sneak through. And these people, you know, they are volunteers. So you shouldn't try to pull one over on them. You should be really respectful and kind, and you know, not try to push yourself through, because it just kind of stops the whole process of people going into the corrals. And so I think that's what I think about that.
Chris, any observations from when you did the marathon in January down in Florida?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, especially with the early morning marathons, it gets a little bit cold, and you're going to be wearing a lot of clothes. Those clothes can be discarded. But also, people want to stay warm, and they tend to start doing calisthenics in the middle of a crowded place, and it just doesn't help when you got somebody like doing leg kicks, you know, into your back. So if you're going to do that, at least step to the side or step out of the corral for a minute or two to do your stretching or whatever, because you may end up hurting somebody that's standing right next to you.
That's a great point. Another thing that I've noticed, Chris, that you just jogged my memory here, pun intended, is that sometimes people go into the corrals early and they sit down. They kind of camp out in a spot, and that can be dangerous for everybody too, because people are streaming into these corrals, and you don't want to have to step over somebody and ruin their race by spraining an ankle or stepping on their leg.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, all these are very, 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 you know, they all ring a bell with me. And one thing I remember, Michelle, when we did the Disneyland half marathon, do you remember people just going into any, they went into any corral they wanted to, and there was some really unbalanced corrals. Some were just too packed, and there's a reason for the corrals beyond the actual pace differences between the corrals. There's a numbers issue that the race officials have to deal with. So they need to balance out the corrals and the waves.
So you mean numbers in terms of there are only a certain number of 100 people in each, so that when you're starting, they're not trampling over each other.
Well, let's say you have 10,000 runners and you have, 12 corrals. You want to make sure that the number of runners in each corral is balanced out. And sometimes that means, you know, there's a difference of a minute. Someone may be doing an 8-minute pace and they're in this corral, and the people who are doing 9-minute paces, you know, they're in the corral behind them or whatever. But they're trying to balance out so that the number of released runners per corral is pretty even, and we didn't see that in the Disneyland half. We saw a lot of people climbing over the barricades. There were not enough volunteers, and that's something that, you know, is very disturbing. We can say that is not the case. Hopefully, that's not the case anymore, and it's not the case in Walt Disney World, where they have as many as 3 volunteers at the gates of every. Every corral, and your bib has your corral and sometimes your wave on your bib. So they need to see that. So you need to prominently display your bib so that you will be allowed entrance into the corral.
Right.
So.
Actually, at the Wine and Dine, I think there were 6 in the corral that I was in, and they had flashlights because it was dark. And people are still trying to skirt by.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention another thing about the corrals too, which is walkers and people walking together or running together. The Disney race etiquette says that walkers should go into the last corral, and those walking together should also go into the last corral. And I think that's important too, that we encourage you, if you want to stay together, stay together. But make sure that you push back, because there're going to be people trying to pass you, and it's just important, if you're going a little bit more slowly, to push yourself back in the last corral.
So I'm going to ask Steve or Chris, either one of you have, maybe Chris may have a little comment on, or anybody have anything you want to add before we wrap up this show? It looks like we're going to go to show 2 with Runner's Etiquette. Anything?
No, I think it just comes back to, like Michelle was saying, you know, it's, and then you were saying as well, Mike, is, you know, it's part of it is safety, you know, and to put people out on the course at the proper paces. And there is, we've all done it. If anybody's run any significant number of races, local races, not such an issue at Disney, but, you know, where you, you know, the gun goes off and, you know, you go to take off and run and, you know, you've got three walkers, you know, abreast right in front of you and you're trying to run a 7:10 pace or whatever. And it's just, it just doesn't, it's not a comfortable situation for anybody. You know, it's not good for the walkers. It's not good for the runners. So in just, again, keeping this big, happy running family, I mean, is everybody just needs to put themselves where they're going to be most productive and it's going to be the safest and most enjoyable. And it all works out if everybody kind of follows the rules.
Yeah, I think that the last thing you said, Steve, is the most important thing, following the rules. And that's the whole idea of this, the show topic, is that we need to – there are unwritten rules that are out there. And it's runner's etiquette, runner's protocol, whatever you want to call it. And I think that it's important that everybody is aware of that. And with that, it looks like we're going to go on to we'll have to continue this discussion at our next topic show, and the four of us will be back to discuss what happens during an actual race. This show is focused on training. This show is focused on what you do before the race, and we're going to cover the runner's etiquette slate of rules for the second half of this discussion. So I'm going to thank Chris Aliopoulos for coming on, and Chris will be back for show two. I want to thank Michelle and Steve for their insights. And this is Mike Scopa from the Mickey Miles Podcast, and we'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.